You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Spartan Dog Podcast is brought to you by Simple Tees. SimpleTee.org. We make shirts, we give back is the tagline. It's the only company that you're going to print shirts. You're going to get a great product. They're going to give back to the community. It's a win-win for everybody. Conquest Health and Fitness. Get in there, reshape, rebuild, and renew yourself. A lot of people want to know, how do I get built like Dre Hutt? I need this physique. Conquest is where it's at. Take your car Evergreen Car Wash and Detail. Show up and ride like a champion. They'll have you in the streets clean from head to toe. Look at the wheels, the rims. They'll get you looking right. Let's roll.
Welcome to Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio. I am Ty TJ Duckett.
I'm Timbo Gracchus.
Andre Hudson.
We're here for another week of conversation. Listen, we have a new Facebook page. It's Spartan Dogs Podcast. www.facebook.com/Spartan Dogs Podcast. Check us out. We'll be putting all of our podcasts on there. Send us questions. Send us some feedback. Let us know what you think, how you feel. And we'll be able to answer those questions and maybe even have some of those topics be your questions. So check us out, Spartan Dogs Podcast on Facebook. Today's topic, one topic I want to talk about is getting to, let's talk about failure. We talk about success all the time. We talk about things, reasons why we want to be successful, why we want to win. But I would like to talk about the impact that failure has, that losing has on champions, on what it can do to their mind state, how it can motivate them. Recently, I was at a conference, and I was with a guy who was a pretty successful kicker in the NFL and the USFL. And I saw his phone, and on his phone, he had a picture of him after a missed field goal, after a big playoff game. And usually on your phone, you see your family, or you see just, you don't see one of the worst moments in your life on your cell phone that you look at every single day. Mm-hmm. And I saw that, and instantly I asked him, what's this about? Why would you do that? And he said, this way I can never forget when I was at my worst moment. I can never forget what it was like. I can never forget what failure felt like, but I also know at the same time, I know how to pick myself back up. I know I can do anything. I know anything that's thrown at me, I can fight my way through it, and at the end of it, I can be a new person and with a new opportunity. And every time I look at that, no matter what my day's like, it gives me strength, and it gives me a chance to know that the next step is more important than this last step I just had. He said that to me, and it blew my mind. I mean, we don't really think about those failures. I mean, we put them in the back of our head. And for that to be someone who is a very successful now, crossed over into the business world, their mentality, it's common, but we don't talk about it. Yeah. So here's one I would like to at least just talk about it. And maybe if we can go around the table and speak on some things that might have been what we may call failures. Not necessarily to other people, but for our own personal, what that might have been. And I guess we can start with you, Dre.
Yeah, I can kick it off, man. That's a great topic, man. I felt like I've dealt with failure, you know, for a long time, man. I think a lot of kids, a lot of us who have been in athletics, you know, at an early age, we had to learn how to deal with it. You know, I played on teams where quite often my team was one of the better teams in the league. And so when we took losses, it was hard, man. It was hard. I didn't play, you know, all the years I played in football up until high school, we were pretty good. Once we got to high school, we were getting whooped on. And then that opened up a whole nother light. But when you're successful and you're used to winning, dealing with failure is tough to do, man. And you see, you know, a lot of people don't deal with it well. I mean, one instance that I think we all can understand because we've all seen it is the Chris Webber timeout and back in 92 or whenever it was, probably not that early, but 93 was it 93?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. The thing that strikes me today is with, you know, all the success Michigan was having this year basketball-wise, you saw a lot of the Fab Five coming out. They had a Fab Five special. And, you know, Chris Webber still couldn't – he still couldn't deal with it. You know, even the other four guys of the Fab Five were saying, oh, yeah, I wish, you know, we can get Chris back for this game, or I wish Chris would come and say this and that. And all the other guys were kind of dealing with it. But he still, to this day, can't seem to deal with it. And I think – you know, it's tough, man. It's different, and it's different for everybody. You know, everybody has their own situations. And for me, personally, I think I've learned from failure, and it's got me to the point now where I'm not afraid of failing.
Yeah.
You know, coming out of college, so many people for years were saying, "Oh, why aren't you in the NBA? You should have been in the NBA." You know, this and that, and it was tough for a while, for a few years. You know, going over, I dealt with injuries. I went overseas, and I had shots to make teams, and sometimes I didn't take the chance. Sometimes, you know, I got cut, and it was tough to deal with it. But, you know, after some years, I really grew from it and found out that, you know, I could still be successful, still have a great life, and not be in the NBA. And so from that experience, it's really helped me. It's carried over into the business world, where now I'm not afraid to take chances. And if I fail, hey, it's not like something else won't come up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's life, and we have to deal with failure throughout life. We all do.
Yeah, I think for me, failure really, for me, started, I paid attention to it coming out of high school with when I never received the scholarship that I expected to get. Mm-hmm. Now, the expectation is a whole nother, you know, issue into my own personal ego of an athlete. But to me, that was a failure that I personally dealt with. And even to today, I take even little failures and they become almost chips on my shoulder of motivation. And I mean, people don't realize it. Even if I'm talking to somebody and they, you know, they just take a shot at like, let's say I'm at work and they just, you know, give me a little, you don't even work. You're always traveling. You don't do anything. And I laugh with them. But to me, I take that almost as a failure of not letting them understand what I'm doing. And it almost at night drives me to, like, I think about it at night. I think about shots I missed at night sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't even really know how to explain it, other than it's such a driving force to me, and it's almost like I want to prove you so wrong that I'm not gonna stop going towards this goal that I have until I get there. Yeah. Because all those past failures and times that I didn't make it are just keeping pushing me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I saw a great video yesterday from a good friend of mine, Eric Thomas, talking about using his previous pain to push him to further greatness. And it hit me so hard. I was like, that's a perfect analogy of dealing with your past failures and not letting them define you as a failure of a person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would have been easy, you know, for Dre to, you know, give in to people saying, well, you're not in the NBA, so you're not doing anything worthwhile, when he's, you know, probably he's more successful than half the NBA.
True.
In some aspects. So for me, those failures on a daily basis, and if I feel like things are going too well, so I'll manufacture one of them just to continue to keep a chip.
Okay, coach.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, something will be manufactured to where I feel like I fail at something, or there's a doubt being presented towards me. And so I can just keep on rolling.
Man, so do you think, because both of you said kind of later in life, later life, high school, college-ish, do you think that, and these sports, from a sports perspective, you started these sports from a long time ago, early. Yeah. Do you think that we were, and some people say, you know, you're too dumb to really know what's going on. Do you know what I'm saying? When they see a young person in an environment, they say, man, that kid's too dumb to even understand what stage the platform. Do you think that that was the case when we were like 6 years old, 7 years old, playing this game, and all of a sudden we're running the wrong way. We're lining up wrong. We're doing all these things wrong. And coach is like, hey, you know, scoot up a little bit. Move over here. Go that way.
Right.
Saying all these things. And we're like, oh, we're taking the big roundabout. Do you think as we started to master our craft, we started to look at, I mean, obviously we didn't, we grew and our knowledge of the game grew and developed, so there weren't as many of those simple failures.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that now in the new us, the new business side, when we're the young-minded business entrepreneur and we're making those same mistakes, do you think that it's a harder issue because our expectations now are so much bigger because of what we've reached? You see what I'm saying?
I think it's harder now because we don't always have that coach to say, you're lined up wrong.
Yeah, okay.
So that sometimes we start running the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Because all of us, we all start, we all have an idea and we just start.
Yeah.
That's just how we go. And then all of a sudden, somebody reels you in and says, you're running the wrong way. Come join the team over here and run the right play. So I think now we just start running the wrong direction until somebody notices.
Yeah.
But we don't have a coach for that.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's hard to make sure you're lined up correctly all the time.
Yeah, and outside of coaching, I think experience is a big factor as well. I mean, I go back and I think, you know, I think I was in fifth grade when I went to my first national AAU tournament. And before this point, I played basketball for like 2 years, but I was really tall, gangly, really uncoordinated. So I was just kind of the big guy on our team. And this was my first trip to the national AAU tournament. And in this tournament, I played well. We lost, you know, I think we lost in the semis or something. We finished fourth or fifth. And I was crushed. I mean, I was just, it was the first time where I really started playing well with my teammates, with my group. My teammates started seeing me like, oh, okay, Dre, you know, good game. And I started to feel more confidence in them, and everything was just at a high, and then we lost. And so dealing with that failure was devastating for all of us. Man, I remember we all were just, like, bawling, you know what I mean, just hurt because we thought we were so good and we were the best and this and that, according to our coaches and family. And I received the AAU All-American honor. They picked, like, 12 guys from the tournament.
Hey. Nice.
And so, but like you talked about, you know, having an understanding of what you're really going through. I got this All-American thing, and my coaches are going crazy. Oh, Dre, sweet, sweet. I had no idea what All-American meant, to be honest. I just thought it was another
trophy,
you know what I mean? And so, and really, at the end of the day, that's all it really was. I just put All-American on it. But when I brought it home to my family, I mean, the joy and the pride that they had just really made me aware of what I really accomplished. And, you know, my failure didn't seem so big to me at that point, you know, and I think it was actually going through the experience of that failure. And I find myself in the same situation today. I mean, back then we did have coaches and parents to kind of boost us up, but it was still an experience we had to go through. And that's what I feel like today. I mean, I go through something, I might fail at it, but at least I know, you know, not to do that again or don't do it that way, or maybe seek out some help next time regarding that issue. You know, it's just going through the process.
And really, I guess for now, a big thing that failure is, it's the expectations that we have for ourselves. I mean, we put a lot on ourselves, and maybe it is even back like when you were playing in the AAU game, you worked hard to win that game.
Right.
And so the expectation was so big, and it was life.
Right.
And then when that didn't happen, everyone else's real life still sees, man, good job. What are you talking about? It was a success.
Yeah.
Where we, and I don't know if that's a good thing, and I don't know if it's a bad thing, but we work so hard in different areas that when we have a failure that we look at it as, it ruins our world. It crushes our world.
Right.
But our expectations are also out of this world. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they are completely, most people might think they're unreasonable. And so when we go and we do something and we're performing at a high level and we miss a shot or we miss a hole, man, I worked so hard for this, that. I knew it was coming. I knew it was going to be there. And I killed, well, you got another play tonight? Well, you don't understand. Yeah. I've been working at this, and I missed it. And is it a fault to think that way? Is it a fault to have high expectations? I mean, super high expectations?
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
You listen to the Spartan Dog Podcast. Tim, TJ, Twitter, Lestray Hut. expectation-wise, I don't see the point to lowering your expectations to everybody else's. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to be the president, be the president. If you want to be in the NFL, be in the NFL. But no one should say, "I'd like to almost make it."
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to almost be the CEO of a company. Yeah. No, it doesn't. That doesn't make sense. I think what's worse is if you sell yourself short. I think later in life it'd be so much worse to wake up one day and see the person that you could have been.
Yes.
So, if you get to that point where you're like, I could have been the CEO, I could have been in the NFL, but these are the steps I left on the table, and I just wasn't willing. Even if you have to take those steps just to find out, just to take a shot at it. I mean, it's so much worse. So much worse to say, I could have been great. We've all met people, sports, anything, that have their story of, and it's always, I could have done this, but so-and-so stopping me. Yeah. I could have been this, but so-and-so wouldn't pass me the ball.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's, we all know there's never an external force that's really stopping you. Yeah. We've never had a coach that stopped you from trying to be successful.
Right.
Or put you in a position. So that, to me, that's...
Unless
that's
they cut you.
Well.
Yeah, forget about those coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, they've just helped you transition into the next portion of your life. That's the next... Listen, you're not quite ready for this, but we think you'd be good over here.
Exactly.
Yeah, kind of, I agree with what you said too, Tim. I don't think people should lower their expectations because somebody else might think they're out of this world. The thing is... The problem is when people don't reach those expectations. Some people can deal with it and some can't. And I think that's the question. Like, how do those people who, really feel like they gave everything to this one goal and, it doesn't happen. And now they don't know how to live. They don't know how to move on.
Yeah.
You see that in relationships. Somebody gives their all to somebody and then they get, dump like you gave your situation with, the NFL.
Yeah.
How does somebody deal with that? Yeah. When they feel like they've given everything they have to offer, and it gets rejected, it gets turned down, it doesn't work, it doesn't pan out. I mean, what are some things you can give listeners to help pick them up out of that situation?
Well, you even know, but like we talked about a second ago, that expectation is a loss in your AAU world.
Right.
But you actually, how much you achieve, you pushed the limit. I mean, you pushed a goal.
But I had people telling me, I had my family and then friends saying, hey, you really did good.
Yeah.
What about those people who don't? A lot of people have those naysayers like, hey, I told you so.
That's true.
I told you not to do that.
That's
true. What I mean?
And I think that's one of the hardest things to overcome. It's all the forces coming from all these ways saying, see, I told you.
Right.
See, and I think that success or failure also depends on the work ethic that's put into it. Mm-hmm. And you have to be honest about what you did. You have to be honest. Did I really, truly, I had this huge dream, but did I truly match the work, the effort, did I truly prepare for this dream? And if you have, you also got to look at the source of who's saying the naysayer, I guess I could say, because there are certain people who, for example, there are kids who I'm going to college to be a Division I athlete, and I live in high, and I'm in high school. Mm-hmm. Okay, I did it, and I'm watching these kids at 3 o'clock. They're like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm on the bus. I'm going. Wait, hold on. You said you want to do this, but you on the bus on the way home,
right?
And so then they get let down, and it's like, I'm telling you right now, the steps that you're doing, everything you're doing right now, you're not putting yourself in a great situation to achieve your dream.
Yeah.
And I think you look at the people who are sitting down and saying, no, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. And then you hanging out with them.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Because they're not willing to push. They're not willing to work. They're not willing to go for what's out there. And if you look around your surroundings, you say, I'm still with these same people who said, no, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And we're still on the couch. I mean, that to me, that's when you either have to change your surrounding or you have to dig deeper inside and really evaluate yourself.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. You gotta look. You gotta look back at yourself and say, "What did I do?"
And be honest.
Be honest. Be honest with yourself. That's how you come out of that state.
Hardest thing for people to do is self evaluate.
If you can tell yourself that you truly did everything you could have done, then I think you can live with it. If you can realize that, you know what, I really didn't do what I needed to do. Yep. You can live with that fact too. But if you don't put the blame on yourself and stop putting it on others, I mean, I think that's the answer.
If you look, there's no one who's ever achieved a dream who did it without a failure along the way.
Exactly. Oh,
yeah. It's just a step towards success.
Yeah.
They taught them what not to do, right?
I mean,
the amount of people that say, once you fail, that there's a majority of people that just stop.
Yeah.
Right.
Say, yeah, I tried.
Yep.
I try. I don't. I gave it a C plus effort.
Yeah. How often are you hearing that when somebody loses the game, that was a good loss, or we needed a loss?
Yeah.
They need to change the word from failure to keep pushing. Instead of saying I failed, I just got to keep pushing, because that's. I mean, you have so many opportunities in life, things that will give you the easiest chance to fail. But the hard thing is getting up, like Tim said, and being successful, knowing I tried this. Okay, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Let me try it. Okay, that didn't work.
Yeah.
Now let me go to door number three.
Failing's the easiest thing you'll do every day.
Yeah. Right. And it shouldn't be looked as a stigma.
Yeah.
I guess that at the end, to sum this whole thing up, failure shouldn't be looked at as an end all, be all. It's a part of the process.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's part of, if you want this goal, if you want that goal, it's part of the process to propel you even further. And if you haven't failed, you're not testing yourself,
right,
or your expectations aren't high enough.
Exactly.
And maybe that's because you aren't ready to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you don't just understand your potential.
Yeah.
Your possibilities.
You don't just have the right to be a success.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of
who you
are.
You're not entitled to it.
Yeah. You're not entitled to success. You're entitled to the work.
Yes.
And whatever comes from the work is what you get, but you're not entitled to it.
So I guess, sum this up, Spartan Dogs Podcast Radio. Failure, it's the key to success. I mean, it is, at the end of the day, are your expectations high enough? Is your work hard enough? And if that's the case and you don't achieve that particular goal, raise the expectation, raise the work, and overcome whatever that failure was. And just keep building those blocks. Keep building those blocks. And at the end of the day, you'll be able to look back at 100, maybe 200 failures while you're standing on top of that one huge success that failure built them all.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That's it. We're in on that.
Boom.
Spartan Dog Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Go green.
Go white.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, back for his annual visit to the program is good friend Dr. Jeff Andreessen, who's the state climatologist for Michigan and a professor in the MSU Department of Geography. Jeff, what a difference a year makes, even with the vicissitudes of Michigan weather.
Even by our standards, it has. It defies sometimes the statistics, but in some ways, we've done much better then, and even though we have had some ups and downs, it's been a bit more predictable this year than we had last year.
Would you say that what we saw this winter and this spring going into the summer here soon is more common than the anomaly we had last year?
It is. Last year, with the March heat wave, which was unprecedented, that we've never observed anything like that in our history. That was followed, of course, by a major drought, and there were a series of freeze events. There were a number of weather-related problems, certainly for the agricultural industry in the state. This year, we not without its problems. We had a milder-than-normal winter that turned cold late. December and January were significantly milder than normal, and then February was pretty close. But then in March and April, temperatures remained well below the normals. That was a great thing for the fruit industry, which had seen the opposite conditions in the previous year. But we also had the other piece of that is we had above normal precipitation during much of the latter half of the winter and certainly during the spring. Some areas, especially the Grand Rapids area, the west central part of the state, received more than 10 inches of rain during the month of April. All-time new records were broken for wettest April on record, and of course, well, the Grand River in particular, there were a number of problems with flooding and certainly a lot of economic impact of that. So that's a negative. On the positive side, with that precipitation, we did generally replenish our subsoil moisture reserves that had been depleted during the drought of last year. So if you look at over a large area, that's a big deal because we ended the year last year following that drought with a lot less water than we typically do, and that above-normal precipitation hopefully will be of help as we go through the growing season this year. And I think we can say there may be a couple of exceptions, but they're very localized or isolated, that we have, we've replenished what was lost and even more so. And generally, there's a great deal of optimism for this growing season. We've had a couple bumps on the way, our Mother's Day freeze, being one of them. And it's certainly with the cold, wet April, there was a lot of nervousness, pent-up energy, and a lot of people wanted to get going, and Mother Nature really sort of put the brakes on, at least early. But we also had a very, very nice turn of events on the beginning of May. We had a 10-day stretch of very warm and dry weather, and we've some thrown in since. So we've made up. I think we've caught up in general with where we should be.
Back to the fruit growers a bit. As we both know, a lot of the Michigan apple fruit crop was wiped out last year. So obviously there was a lot of nervousness. But how badly did that Mother's Day, Mother's Night freeze hurt the crop this year?
Well, there was, from the reports we have now, we know that there was some damage, but it tended to be localized, and low-lying areas were impacted more. And we do know also in terms of a crop that the juice grapes, once again, probably were maybe impacted more than other crops. So there was some damage, but that being said, overall, I think given the meteorological conditions, it could have been much worse. We had an unusually cold air mass for this time of the year over the region, and there was a great deal of concern that weekend as we looked at that freeze event. But so there is some damage, both in fruit, some vegetable transplants, a little bit of alfalfa nipped off at the tops, burned back. but it could have been, given how cold the air was and how dry it was, it could have been worse than probably looks like we have now. Parts of the state, including the northwestern lower, which is a large fruit-producing area, came through relatively unscathed. They actually had lake effect cloudiness during the event there that helped keep temperatures up a little bit warmer than they would have been otherwise. So overall, yes, we have some damage to report in some areas, but it could have been worse. And overall, if you look at the industry, especially tree fruit, I think there's still a great deal of optimism.
I'm talking with Jeff Andreessen, who's a state climatologist for Michigan. The winter you mentioned was more of a normal winter pattern. We got quite a bit of precipitation in March.
Right.
We've talked about lake levels in the past. And how did the winter impact the lake levels?
Interesting question. And all I know is from looking at the data, looking at the levels, quite interesting. And it turns out that there's an annual cycle, a very distinct annual cycle in the Great Lakes level. And we'll look at Lake Michigan here on. That's one closest to at least most of Michigan. And in that basin, we typically see the lowest levels of the year occur in the middle of the winter, and then it rebounds, and we see the maximum in the summer. Well, a typical rebound from the minimum by the spring is about 3 inches. That's what the long-term averages say. With all of the precipitation we saw in April, we gained 6 inches, so about twice the normal increase. So it's still below normal, well below normal, and it's been that way for some time, but it's quite a bit better than it has been, at least in the recent past. And remember, we set new records for all-time low levels back at the end of 2012 and the beginning of 2013.
What is the summer looking like right now?
Well, the way that those outlooks are typically made, we look at the Pacific and we look at the El Nino Southern Oscillation, or ENSO, and what phase it's in, because that typically has a correlation with our long-term climate state during the summertime. This year, it's basically neutral. We have neither La Nina or El Nino, the positive and negative phases of ENSO. So there's a little bit less information there. But with the other guidance that we do have taken from the forecast models and also from antecedent conditions, we've had a very, very unusually wet late winter, early spring over much of the upper Midwest, including part of Michigan. That goes into that forecast as well, that factor. What they've come up with, at least at the Climate Prediction Center, is the likelihood of milder or warmer than normal conditions this summer, with no real direction on precip. And that's been the forecast now for the last couple of cycles, going back a couple of months. But given that there's no El Nino, La Nina signal, I think that the confidence is a little bit less than it typically is. But officially, warmer than normal mean temperatures with no real direction on precip. And we've had many questions, of course, could there be a repeat of the drought last year?
Right.
And
that was my next question, yeah.
Certainly always in the realm of possibility. However, back-to-back droughts in Michigan are extremely rare. That's a good thing. As you go further west, that frequency increases. But in Michigan, we've only had a couple of instances in at least our recorded history going back 125 years or so where that's been the case. So I think that the probability is extremely low, and you can't write it off, but it's very, very unlikely that we would see drought again.
You mentioned going west. You get into the corn and wheat belt and those things. They had really tough times out there, parts of Iowa. You know this. I mean, did they get any precipitation like we did? Were some of that soil moisture restored for them
right.
as well?
Some of those areas did, notably the central corn belt, parts of Iowa, Illinois. And remember, last year the drought, it covered large areas of central U.S. So parts of the Corn Belt, the central, and even western parts of the Corn Belt, Northwest, did very well with terms of precip here up into Minnesota. The exception would be the southern Great Plains and into the central Great Plains, portions of Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. Their drought conditions still are lingering, and there is certainly an enhanced probability that they will have problems with lack of water again, once again this year. So that's the area probably to focus on in regard to drought.
Jeff, as you know, your department, the Department of Geography, recently hosted a Chasing Ice, the director of a National Geographic film
right.
called Chasing Ice. pretty dramatic evidence of the receding of some of our major ice sheets in Iceland and Greenland. Frankly, I saw it. My producer, Russ White, was there. It's a pretty compelling film, and it offers visual evidence that the climate is warming and is having a major impact on parts of the world. Your thoughts on things like the chasing ice and the receding ice fields and that sort of thing?
Well, I think if you back up and look at this on a global level, it's estimated now that about 90% of the world's glaciers and ice masses, but especially glaciers, are shrinking, are receding. And then, of course, there's only two ways that that can happen. One is that they're melting because of warmer temperatures, or there's less precipitation added into the system, it's becoming drier, or a combination of both. But the evidence taken, again, collectively around the world strongly suggests it's mostly due to warming, and that even there are even glaciers receding in areas that have increasing precipitation. So it has to be melting. And as you observed, to actually see that happen over time is something that is compelling. It's something I think we can all identify and realize that, it has to be. It probably is getting warmer to see this this melting going on. And that's, in fact, what is happening. And a lot of the warming over the last few decades, more than other areas of the world, has taken place in high-latitude locations. And even we would even include parts of the mid-latitudes like the Great Lakes, Canada, would also be included in that. And with that warming, we have loss of ice. And there have also been a couple of recent studies that suggested that the amount of loss of ice, at least in the northern hemisphere, is even greater than that the worst projections of 10 and 20 years ago. And that's something we don't see too often, where the actual observed outcome is beyond the bounds of the original predictions. So in the upcoming IPCC fifth assessment, I'm sure that will be changed, and the loss of ice, that will be reflected in the new statements and new projections.
My guest is Jeff Andreessen, state climatologist from Michigan, also a professor in the MSU Department of Geography. There have been some studies recently, and I'm going to get you a little bit into a realm that I know you don't like to go particularly, but a little bit of the political realm. But okay. There was an MSU sociologist recently who just came out with a study that shows that there are still a lot of people out there who don't even agree that there's a consensus among scientists on the fact that we have global warming and mm-hmm. climate change. I mean, given all that you've seen, all the data, talking to climatologists, meteorologists, reading the reports, atmospheric scientists, all of that, I mean, how can people actually say that there is not a consensus among scientists?
That's a very, very interesting question, to say the least. A couple thoughts, though. One is that it is this is science, and we have to search for truth and objectivity. And given that, we have skepticism is healthy. We have to have it. It's a part of how the system works. That being said, however, if we look at numbers and we look at this issue, the numbers I've seen are overwhelming. And at least atmospheric science, people involved in atmospheric science, the number of people, at least in agreement that, well, both that the climate is changing, that humans have at least some role or responsibility in that, is overwhelming. It's well in excess of 90%. So the idea that the scientists themselves don't believe that humans are changing climate and the Earth is warming, I don't think there's any foundation for that. Sure, there are a couple of maybe of individuals that have other ideas, but I don't think I don't think there's any question the Earth is getting warmer. There's no question about that. The other question related, of course, is what do humans have to do with that change? And the evidence there is also overwhelming that at least some of that change is related to human activity. So, again, back to the original question, I guess we have to, skepticism is healthy, but there is just every year there's more evidence pointing in one direction. And so we have to make some, I think, prudent decisions or choices at some time. Given the evidence that we have, it's probably never going to be 100% black and white one way, but there is, I think that there, personally, that there is compelling evidence.
And, you know, frankly, and you know this, Jeff, you look at the history of science and you look at things way back to is the world flat or round or evolution. Whenever there are major scientific breakthroughs, there is a lot of skepticism, and sometimes it takes people a long time to get out of denial.
It does, and again, that's how our system works, as we try to find out what is reality. But we have to have objective information to make decisions on, and I think that's how the process works. Sometimes it takes longer than we'd like, but every year there's more and more evidence, I think, that points in one direction.
And now we have the visual evidence and things like chasing ice, which is even more compelling. Well, Jeff, a good report this spring, a lot more optimistic in many ways than last year, and it's always a pleasure to see you. I've been talking with Jeff Andreessen, a state climatologist from Michigan, also a professor in the MSU Department of Geography. You have a great rest of the spring and summer as well.
You as well, Kirk. Thanks much.
You're listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's nice to welcome back to the program John Sarver. John is the executive director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association, which is again hosting the Michigan Energy Fair coming right up Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Ludington, Michigan. John, good to see you.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Kirk.
So what can we expect for this year's Michigan Energy Fair?
Well, we're doing something a little different this year. Friday, June 7th, we're making a professional business day. And so we're going to have 20 workshops really geared toward professionals in the energy industry or facility managers, educators. So the workshops will be more technical. We'll have workshops like on the smart grid and different utility programs and state policies that people in the industry need to know. And then on Saturday, we'll have our traditional, for the general public, about 40 exhibits and about 18 workshops, more geared toward a typical homeowner or small business that's thinking of making improvements to their building or thinking of an alternative fuel vehicle, electric vehicle. We're going to have a showcase there of electric vehicles and a variety of other activities during Saturday. There'll be, again this year, tours of the wind farm that Consumers Energy has in Mason County. So, yeah, we're focusing on Saturday for the general public this year.
And there's a community solar initiative that you're rolling out at the fair this year, or that your organization is rolling out?
Yeah, actually, we started it in January, and this is kind of an initiative of GLREA. And the concept is that there are individuals who have maybe a house that has a lot of shading or maybe isn't oriented to the south, or maybe you're a renter and the solar electric system still it's a significant investment. So we're looking for an approach where people can make a small investment in a larger system and get some benefit. And actually, we've been talking about this, like I said, since the first of the year, but now we have our first example in Michigan of a program. Cherryland Electric Co-op, actually this month, is just starting, and they're offering to their members, this electric co-op near Traverse City, to basically lease a solar panel for a little under $400 for 25 years. And then what will happen is whatever electricity is produced from those solar panel will be a bill credit on their utility bills. And so that's, again, the concept. They're starting out with 48 panels. There'll be 48 shareholders who will lease those panels for long-term lease, obviously 25 years, and then get a benefit on their utility bills.
You know, John, it occurs to me this speaks directly to those of us who've seen solar panels at businesses or in homes and thinking, you know, I'd love to do that, but I don't know if I can make that initial investment to do it by myself. So the idea is you aggregate resources here and you share the costs.
Yeah, that's the basic concept. There are a lot of individuals who are interested and for a variety of reasons, like we've talked about, just it doesn't make sense because of there are too many trees or just it's too expensive. And here's an opportunity like in Cherryland where $400, which is, you know, feasible for most people. They can kind of make a small investment, obviously, and kind of promote renewable energy and also get something back at the same time.
And then I don't have to worry about that solar panel in my backyard and which way to tilt it every day so that it catches the sun, or maintenance issues that may arise.
That's right. You really, it's no issues for you as an investor or shareholder. It's just a matter of, you know, are you interested in investing that $400? And, you know, it's, well, actually, these days, it may be as good an investment as having your money in the bank. You don't get a lot of interest in the bank anymore, so it may not be such a bad investment. And, you know, Sharyland's a good example. If somebody wants to lease more than one panel, they'll be able to do that. So it could be $400, it can be $800, whatever.
You know, this is just another example of all the exciting things that are going on with renewable energy. But some of this is not without some bumps on the road. I mean, you mentioned before we started this interview that there's an issue with a consumer's energy wind farm up in Mason County. There's also the Clinton County wind farm issue, where there's some townships in Clinton County that aren't sure that they want wind farms. In fact, they're pretty adamantly opposed. I mean, you would think that wind farms would be a good thing, but they're not without opposition.
You know, looking at kind of the big picture in Michigan, there's been communities, Gratiot County is a good example, Huron County, that have really welcomed these utility-scale wind farms for a number of reasons, the primary one being it's such an investment in their community and increases the tax base and creates jobs, too, some good-paying jobs. But these are large projects. You know, we're talking these days about 100 wind turbines, large wind turbines, you know, over 400 feet tall, and it changes the visual impact in a community, and people get concerns about the sound and the shadow flicker, and just the visual impact. And so, in Mason County, where Consumers Energy has that wind farm, like I mentioned before, we're going to have some tours of that wind farm because it's real interesting to get up to these big wind turbines and get a chance to ask lots of questions and actually see what they sound like. And there are, I believe, 17 neighbors have sued them, basically alleging that the sound and the shadow flicker and other impacts have impacted their health. Now, the one you mentioned up in Clinton County, yeah, it's a different types of lawsuit, as you know, because there are three townships that have put in place more restrictive requirements than the county itself. And so the wind developer has gone to the county and asked for a permit. And apparently their plans meet all the requirements of the county, but the township's requirements are more strict. So it's a legal issue now of whether the townships have kind of standing, I guess. Can they make different requirements than the county? And I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure how this is going to work out. But yeah, that lawsuit is actually coming from the wind developer side and kind of asserting their right to build that wind farm since they meet the county requirements.
Yes, and you know, with all the excitement of renewable energy, some of these bumps along the road would be expected. This one will work its way out in court. The one in Mason County may work its way out with educational efforts and what have you. But for the folks who may want to attend the Michigan Energy Fair, which is Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th, you mentioned that June 8th is the day for the general public. Where can they get more information on that, John?
They can go to our website, which is the 3Ws, GLREA.org, and we have a lot of information there. And the actual fair will open up at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the workshops will start at 10. And we'll have music during the day and kids' activities and a lot of special activities in addition to the exhibits and workshops.
So that's the Michigan Energy Fair, sponsored and conducted by the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. For more information, go to glrea.org. John, last year's was very successful.
Yes, we had a great fair, and you know, it's the weather was great, and workshops were interesting, and you know, Ludington is such a nice part of this
beautiful city,
state of Michigan. So it's nice to go up and maybe do some, enjoy the beaches at the same time you take in the fair. And there's a lot to do, as you know, on the lakeshore.
Well, I hope that you have even more attendance this year coming up. And it's always great to see you. John Sarber is the executive director of the Great Lakes Renewable Energy Association. And once again,
They're hosting the Michigan Energy Fair in Ludington, Michigan, Friday, June 7th, and Saturday, June 8th. John, always good to see you.
Hey, thank you, Kirk.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
The program is MSU Today. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with some observations from the Spartan life. We love our comfort zones. Even an uncomfortable status quo is preferable to the unknown. But things change. We outgrow a job, or the job outgrows us. Our relationship ends. A health crisis appears. Or the sting of an unhappy current reality becomes so great that we are forced to step outside of our self-imposed boundaries. This is one of life's great ironies. We often fight to stay inside the box when the very thing we need to fuel our future lies on the outside. This week, make a list of the things that are keeping you inside your comfort zone. How many of them are self-imposed? Every single one. The next chapter of your life's adventure will be written with or without your direct involvement. Maybe it's time to imagine what that chapter might be if your uncomfortable comfort zone didn't exist. As I was researching this week's message, I discovered this anonymous poem, which I've customized just for you. I hope it gets you thinking about those self-imposed limitations and the opportunities that lie beyond them. I used to have a comfort zone where I knew I wouldn't fail. The same four walls and busy work were really more like jail. I longed so much to do the things I'd never done before, but stayed inside my comfort zone and paced the same old floor. I didn't want to build the traits successful people share. I watched my friends advance and thrive, pretending not to care. I claimed to be so busy with the things inside the zone, but deep inside, I longed for something special of my own. I couldn't let my life go by just watching others grow. I held my breath, I stepped outside, and let the changes flow. I took a step, and with new strength I'd never felt before, I kissed my comfort zone goodbye and closed and locked the door. If you're in a comfort zone, afraid to venture out, remember that our heroes were at one time filled with doubt. A step or two and words of praise can make your dreams come true. Reach for your future with a smile. Happiness is there for you. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.